7, 2005. We are at the Mexican Heritage Center in San Jose, California. I am Christina Barro is interviewing Josie Carrillo Johnson. Good morning. Good afternoon, I guess now.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to talk a little bit about your family and the impact of the Bracero program. Let's start with your grandparents.
Well, my grandparents are from New Mexico. They were living here prior to the Bracero program. The way our family is connected with the Bracero program is that my father came from Chihuahua, Mexico, and married my mother while he was here during the Bracero program. My grandparents were already farm workers.
And can you tell me their name, please?
My grandfather's name is Martin Lucero, and my grandmother's name is Delfina.
D-E-L-F-I-N-A,
Leal, L-E-A-L, Lucero. And they, you know, generally the crops that we were working on that I remember is we picked tomatoes. Onions were the major crop that I remember because I was a child when we used to go to the fields every day. And so as farm laborers, it was in the major impact that this whole lifestyle had on our family was in the year on June 11th, 1957, one morning. It was my mother was pregnant from my youngest sister, Delfina. My mom named her after my grandmother. My youngest sister Delfina was she was pregnant with her, and that particular morning, my grandmother, knowing my mom wasn't feeling well, she said, "Mija, you stay home with the kids today. I'll go work with your dad." And that day, normally the routine would be we all would get up about four in the morning. We'd wrap up and we'd all be off in the fields. But that particular morning, my grandmother just said, "You stay home with the kids," and which was very unusual because we all had to work. It was very unusual for us to be able to stay home. They went out to work, and that one foggy morning, as they were passing the railroad track, the Southern Pacific Railroad did not set off any warnings that they were crossing. And they hit the farm worker's truck, and that particular accident took the lives of 12 farm workers, my grandparents included. My aunt Rose Lucero and my uncle Joe Lucero were both on there. Those two survived. There were a couple other survivors, but I don't recall their names at this time. But 12 were killed at the time.
What was the location again?
You know, I have to, the location was, it was a little farm town in Colorado, and my mind is blank right now in terms of location. I have the newspaper article that relates to that I'll have to forward that to you. I misplaced that. It was disconnected from my documents. I couldn't find it this morning. Anyway. Sadly to say, you know, my grandparents were killed, and they were the rock of our home, of our family. I mean, they kept us together. My grandparent, they fought the Southern Pacific Railroad for
who is they?
Who I don't, you know, collectively, I think the farm workers. Someone acted as a spokesperson to try to recoup something for the loss of their lives. It is my understanding that the settlement for both of them, because it was the Southern Pacific Railroad was at fault, that was a given, and I think it was $1,000 each. That was a settlement for each of my grandparents. And my mother had five brothers and a sister at the time. So between them, they divided the 2,000. Now, it was very interesting because my mother was given nothing. I just found that out this morning as I was talking to, I called my sister knowing that I was coming here. I asked her if she could recall anything that.
Now, was it 2,000 or was it 200?
No, I said yesterday 200.
Okay.
Because I'll correct that in a minute. This is where I'm going with the story. Is that it was 2,000, 1,000 each, and it was divided amongst everyone. Now I recall my mother in her conversation saying, "All I got was $200," and when I spoke to my sister this morning, what she said was that she didn't get that in cash. What they did, because my mother was receiving welfare for my two older sisters, because my mother was married prior to her marrying my father. She had two children from him. And my grandparents, because they did not accept my father, our father, my grandparents took custody of my two older sisters and said, well, let us take care of the girls. So my two older sisters were in the custody of my grandparents. So they were receiving welfare for them, and because of that, they were getting government assistance, they did not allow my mother to get any cash benefits from their death. They put the money into a credit at a paint store, the local paint store, so that she could remodel the house. My grandparents owned the home that we were living in. And it was just a small home in Rocky Ford, Colorado, 610 North 13th Street, Rocky Ford, Colorado. It's a little tiny house, probably as big as this, I mean, just a tiny little house. But they owned it. And as a result, because my mother was getting government subsidies, she was getting welfare, they did not allow my mother to get any cash from that. So that I found interesting. Her other brothers did divide the money, and they all came out to California during that time and all bought homes, which was, we couldn't understand because we always thought that our uncles were very, very rich. Anybody in California was rich. So that was, you know, this image that we always had, or the stories were, those were your rich uncles because they received some money from the death of the tragic death of my grandparents. But when it comes down to it, it really wasn't that much when you think of the monetary settlement. It was sad. That led to my mom, I mean, our family was just devastated. For 1 week, we had, because we didn't have any money, we had, the funeral was in our home. For 1 week, the two coffins sat in our living room until all the members of my grandparents' family could come and pay their final respects, because at that time, you didn't go to a funeral home. So I remember for 1 week, we sat with the coffins in our living room, which was a makeshift mortuary, until all the people could travel from New Mexico and, you know, the different parts, because people at that time traveled, you know, it would take 2-3 days to, you know, to in traveling. So I remember us having to live with that for about a week.
What was that like?
It was all I remember is just wailing, because the women, my mother was just out of her mind. I mean, I remember was all of my grandmother had 10 sisters. So they came from New Mexico. So, you know, I think this was probably the first time we'd had such a tragic death like that, that all I remember was wailing, the women, you know, the women sitting around in circles and just wailing and crying. And I remember just a tremendous amount of silence because nobody could speak anymore. And that's what I find that our family, because in speaking with my family, I was born in 1952. This happened in 1957. So I was only 5 years old. But what I remember is that everybody just kind of went off into their own silent way to grieve. And it remained that way for years. Everyone in my family has a different story. We all perceived it and experienced it very different. But what my mother was a very, very strong woman. She, because she was removed from her first marriage because of the domestic violence, and my grandfather said he would not allow his daughter to be mistreated. He had that first marriage annulled, and when she married our father, and she had five children from him immediately, one right after another, she swore that she would never go through another divorce again as long as my grandparents were living. Now, being a Catholic woman, you know, my grandparents, we were very Orthodox Catholics. And so to have a divorce in the family is just unheard of. So this next marriage, and she had got separated from him because she was a victim of his abuse. So she was not going to tolerate it anymore. So she separated. That's when he went off, and he came out to California.
Okay, and let's back up just a little bit. Tell me how your parents met.
My parents. My mother was very sad and upset with the fact that after returning back to my grandparents' home, that she had lost all her freedoms. She went back under the same rules as she was when she was single. And you know, in Mexican families, you do not leave the house until you're married. And the male rules the house. And my grandfather, that's just the way it was. So she felt that the only way she was going to get her freedom was to get married again. So one particular night, the braceros, there was a little, I want to call it a cantina. A cantina is a little bar that was just up the road, and that was the only place where anybody went. And women, actually, Mexican women do not go to bars. You know, that was not.
What year is this? Do you remember?
This was in 1949, because that's the year my father came over. She went out, said she was going to a dance, and met my father. Well, before long, she was engaged and married. She didn't even know him. I mean, it was a very, at that time, she didn't even know the first, you only dated him once or twice, and then you were married. There was no courting. It was soon as someone showed an interest in you, that was it. So my mom eventually, she had five kids immediately, and life was a struggle because we were following my dad. She was following him around in the camps, but she was really the only woman because most of the braceros that came out, only the men came out. So it was he started a family immediately, but I don't know if he had a family in Mexico. There was never any talk about, because most of the men had double lives. They had families in Mexico and they had families here. So he immediately had five children. And then he had the two children to the two others from my mom's first marriage. So my two older sisters were not going for it. They were not going to be traveling around in the camps because my grandparents already had their home. So what happened is that, that's how she met. She was just a very quick, there was no courtship there.
Tell me about your dad and his full name, please.
My dad, his name is Roberto Ramon Carrillo. He came, he was born in Chihuahua, according to the documents that I have. He was born in Chihuahua, Mexico. And quite frankly, that's all I know about him. Other than the fact that, up until the time I was, until my grandparents died, like I said, my mom said that she would remain married to him as long as my grandparents were alive. And lo and behold, no sooner had she said that and made that declaration to herself, my grandparents were killed. And somehow, we all have come to the conclusion that, it was kind of like the sacrifice for my mom not to live in this relationship. We just kind of felt that, for some reason, they were taken so my mother would not, my mom is a very strong and stubborn woman, and whatever she says she's going to do, and she had made a vow to herself, she would not allow her parents see her go through a divorce again. And so when they were killed, it kind of freed her to be able to get the divorce that and allow herself to be independent. Now, the only way she was allowed to do this was be at, and to take care of, now she has seven kids, is that the, she was able to get welfare. She got public assistance, and with that, we no longer had to go work in the fields.
Okay, let's talk about working in the fields. Let's back up just a little bit. Talk about growing up where you did, and can you explain the experiences of growing up in the fields?
Well, what I remember is that we would wake up every morning, and they would wrap us up, and it would be cold. I remember the dark mornings because, you know, you had to get up before the sun rose because you wanted to get as much work done before the hot sun set in. So I just remember it always being dark, and then they would load us up on this truck, and we'd go, and we'd have to sit and, you know, kind of just huddle. When I say huddle, they'd put us up, find us a tree to sit under until, at that time, when we were, at that time, I was around five when my grandparents were killed. So I remember that at that time, we couldn't do much in terms of big, major labor. What we did mainly was bring them water. We carried the sacks around. We topped onions. At that time, we used to only get 10 cents for every 100 pounds of onions. So you'd have to fill up about three baskets full of onions, and you'd have to top them.
Explain what topping is.
Topping means that you pull the onion out of the grounds, and if you were good, you could pull one, two, three, and then you take your shears, your clipping shears, and you top the green scallion part off. You top them, and you fill up a basket. If your onions were in good, you know, good size, it wouldn't take much to fill up a basket. But if you got small onions, boy, it was forever. But I remember they would pay us 10 cents for every 100 pounds. So the whole family working together, sometimes, you know, I don't remember. My mother used to keep little records of all of, you know, of how much they would do in a day. And I'm looking for those records now. I kind of put them away. But I remember one time we made $3 and everybody was really excited. And that was amongst six or seven people because, I won't go into that any further. But what I do remember was was just sitting around, and it was interesting because what I remember is that what we ate was the little cans of potted meat because that was the only thing we could bring to the fields. Little cans of potted meat and crackers and and pork and beans. One day, as an adult, I remember I was at a barbecue and somebody gave me some hot pork and beans, and I said, "Yuck." I couldn't understand why people were eating hot pork and beans. And finally I realized that we had never experienced eating the hot pork and beans because we always ate them cold in the field because that was the only way you could keep them. And I remember eating them out of a can. And that's the only way I can eat them to this day. I cannot eat hot pork and beans. So if ever I want to feel that time, I go back and buy me a little can of cold pork and beans. Cold pork and beans and potted meat was what we ate. And bologna sandwiches, because if in the hot sun you didn't have coolers, you didn't have ice, and they were real careful just to give us whatever they could out of a can so that it wouldn't spoil and we wouldn't get food poisoning. I remember my mom being real. So our diet basically was potted meat and pork and beans. And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No. And I remember just, you know, the long days. You just, as early in the earlier days, it was just helping them by bringing them water and doing that. But as I got older, we actually, you know, I was physically very strong. So I was capable of, you know, taking two or three rows of onions at a time, and I could keep up with the adults. During that time, there was one time there when we went, I don't remember the town it was, but my dad got us a job when him and my mom were together. She was trying to keep the marriage together. So he got us a job as a cook in a labor camp. And I remember there was just more than 100 men, I know for sure, because my mom was the only woman in the camp. And my dad, for whatever reason, I don't know, he abandoned us. He left us in the camp alone. And my mom was you know, was left to attend to all of these men. So our job was to, at that time, we didn't have to go work out in the fields. This was a cushy job. We got to stay in the camp. We didn't have to go work out in the hot sun. So we, while the workers were gone, what we would do is we were preparing the meals for when they returned. We prepared the dinner. And then after dinner, in the evening, we would take and prepare the sack lunches. And I remember the Hostess Twinkie man would come in every day and deliver the Hostess Twinkies. And I remember one time we were sleeping in the kitchen on the floor, just the hard floor. There was nothing. My mother used to make our mattresses out of the wool, sheep's wool. My grandmother used to be a sheep herder at one time, and we had all our mattresses were the original sheep wool. So we used to just roll them up like futon. Those were the futons. And so she would lay them out in the kitchen floor. And I remember one time the Twinkie man was coming in to make the morning delivery at the camp, and he had the big flat tray, and one Twinkie fell on the floor right next to me where I was sleeping. And that was a big treat at the time. And I remember he looked down and he kind of winked at me and said, "You got it, you could keep it," because everything was accounted for. So I remember holding on to that Twinkie, that little Hostess, I think it was a little Hostess cupcake, for the entire day. The fact that I got one to myself was a big deal. But anyway, I do remember, you know, us having at night to, you know, as one person would, whatever they can do, I think my younger sister would open the bags, I would throw the Twinkies in. We did individual bags for each bracero.
You weren't allowed to eat any of the food that you were packing?
Oh, well, because those were packaged cupcakes. That was, I don't remember, I mean, I don't remember that we got to eat them freely. I remember everything was just very calculated, because I remember just the thought of having one to myself was a big deal. But I do remember that, you know, at that time, I don't remember or ever even felt I was poor, because I didn't know anything different. My mother fed us well. I mean, we ate beans and potatoes, and that was it. Our diet was beans and potatoes. If we get a little chili on the side, that's what we ate, and rice, beans, potatoes, fresh tortillas every day. But I do remember, you know, we ate okay. My mother made sure that we, you know, that she provided. She made everything she had. She made stretch, because she had seven kids, and that was one thing, is that we were never left. You know, as long as my mother was there, there was plenty of food.
How old were you?
When we were in the labor camp, I was probably, I had to have been four. It was right before my grandparents died, because they came and saved us at the end of, towards the end of the season. I remember they drove up, and my mother was so excited that they finally got word that, you know, she needed help. So they helped finish the season, because my mom got left alone.
Tell me about, they got word.
My father got us the job somehow or other. He got us the contract to work the season in the labor camp, and he left. So that meant,
no idea where he went.
He left. He came to California. He came to California and started. He heard that there was more money out here in California, but he left my mother alone to work that entire labor camp. She was the only woman, and she, you know, when she was afraid of, quite frankly, of being raped, because she had. Four daughters. At that time, she had four daughters there. And I remember we slept in these, what they call these hot beds. You know, all I remember was there were dirt floors, there were no windows. All I remember were these just four little beds, and you would go and you sleep at night. It's not somewhere where you hung out during the day. During the day, we were always in the kitchen or out in the campgrounds. And what I remember was that she wrote a letter to my grandparents and told them of her predicament, that, you know, she was left in the camp and she needed help. We, as the kids, we helped her out. I remember taking, and either you were stirring something or you were taking, we had to take and, you know, take the plates to the men as they were coming in for dinner, and then we pick up the dishes, and I remember washing, you know, dishes for hours at night.
How many men do you fit?
I think there were over 100. Because they would come in. I mean, they were all sitting in rows. I mean, you know, there was this one large room, and there was a lot of men. You know, there were a lot of men. you know, you figured 10 per table. There were about 10 tables. It was a large room. So I think there was about over 100 men in this particular camp. What I do remember was that when they'd come in from the fields in the afternoon, they used to have these big, huge barrels of Kool-Aid. And it was just such a delight. It was like the ice cream man coming. They would come in and they would put us up on the truck and they would let us drink whatever was left over of the Kool-Aid. I'll never forget that. But anyway, what they did was my grandparents did receive a letter stating that, you know, she needed help, and they came and they helped her for the rest of the season, and that was the end of that. We never did go back, and we never went back to another camp. We went back to live. My grandparents said, "No, you're coming to live with us." So they gave my mother one room for all of us and said, "You stay here." And then shortly afterwards, they were killed. So my mother, we ended up living in the home of my grandparents' home.
While you were at the labor camp working, as a child, do you ever remember meeting like the farmer or the farmer's family?
No, I can't remember. I don't remember that. I don't remember any of that at all. All I remember is my mother cooking and my grandparents. That picture that I just remember the long roads, the dusty roads when the car would come up or when the trucks would come in, and I just remember this tree, this little, you know, just this little building where they had the kitchen and where they had the open room where all the men ate. And then after that, there were just like rows and rows of rooms, you know, that was the campground, and they were, you know.
Do you remember the conditions?
Yeah, there were no floors. It was dirt floors, no windows. It was just a little door, a little room, just one little room where all the men stayed. And my mother, that's where we were, you know, we were right there too. So my mom was not too, she didn't feel too comfortable with, you know, this entire, I mean, she was just left there alone with, you know, you're left there unguarded.
Tell me about cooking for all of these men and how that assembly worked, or how, if you can recall that.
Well, what I recall is the big pots. I recall, you know, she cooked a lot of, you know, very basic potatoes, rice, and you know, just some
very
basic.
Was there a separate kitchen facility? Or?
Yeah, there was a kitchen. There was a kitchen there, and all I remember were these big white, you know, just big white plates. That's all I can remember, because they were heavy. They were, and I was going to actually bring one to show you as an example, because every time I see this plate, it reminds me of it. I just remember these big stacks of white plates, because they, and basically what she cooked was, you know, whatever. My mom was a very simple cook. She didn't have a whole lot of recipes. She did a lot, either, you know, she just did, potatoes were our, but we ate potatoes 3 times a day. We ate potatoes for breakfast, rice, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I mean, that was
What would go in the lunch sacks?
The lunch sacks were bologna sandwiches, Hostess cupcakes, and maybe a piece of fruit.
In the bologna sandwiches, would it just be the bologna and the
white
bread?
White bread and the bologna. That's it.
Nothing else.
I don't even remember lettuce. I don't think we even had lettuce. I'm sure there might have been, but I don't. I just remember the bologna and bread. That's it.
And you would hand it. Okay, so in the morning you would wake up around what time? Tell me your daily routine when you were little.
Well, we were sleeping in the kitchen, so we were already in the kitchen. So I remember we would get up, and I remember we all wore braids. So I remember my mom doing. My mom was very clean. She was very, very meticulous and very. And she, no matter where we lived, I mean, everything. There was no excuse for. You know, for cleanliness. My mom was very meticulous about us and about her. She was very strong, but she was still fragile, but she was still very proud. And so she would, you know, we all got our morning, you know, wipe downs. And I remember we would take a bath.
What's a wipe down?
A wipe down was you wet the cloth and you wipe down, and then, you know, your hair got wet and your hair got braided, and you wore you put your clothes on. We got a bath about, maybe a bath in a tub, because we all had the number three, I think it was the number three tubs. you know, those aluminum wash basins. And I remember that would about a, probably at least every 3 days we'd get a nice tub bath. But every night before we went to bed, no one was allowed to get into the bed without washing their feet. That was a routine we all had, because it was dusty. So we all had to sit there and stick our feet in buckets and wash our feet so that the sheets wouldn't get dirty. My mom always had clean sheets. No matter where our bedding was, we always had nice clean sheets. But back to the morning routine, I just remember that we just took directions from my mother. She said, go get this, go get that, whatever. We just, all I just remember were brown paper bags opening. And, you know, we lining them up.
What would you cook for breakfast?
You know, I don't remember the breakfast because the men were already gone by that time.
Okay.
Because what I think my mother did, and I don't know because I don't remember that. I don't remember her doing breakfast because the men were gone. They had to leave before the sun was up. So, but I do remember her, you know, we're just a lot of burritos. You know, you did a lot of, so she must have
maybe. Did she make the tortillas and everything?
I think they brought those. I don't think. No one brought tortillas in.
So she must have.
So is she? But I can't. I don't remember seeing her do that. She made us fresh tortillas every day, but I don't remember her doing that.
Maybe after you went to bed or something.
You know, my guess is that either after we went to bed or while the kids were out playing, she was constantly working. So she must have been doing something in the kitchen. And I think around that time, I think my grandparents, they gave us a break when my grandparents came to help, my grandmother came to help. So I don't remember, all I remember were handing out the plates to the men, collecting them, washing them, drying them, stacking them, and then just bagging the lunches. I don't remember anything about the breakfast, though. Maybe she had that the night before, but back then you didn't have much refrigeration. So whatever the men took to work with them, it's whatever, like I said, our diet was potted meat and pork and beans.
Now, where would the men eat for dinner?
In the hall. It was just a big room. It was a big room like this. And then after that, they would kind of just mill around. You know, just mill around the camps, or most of the time they just go back to their little rooms and probably go to sleep. And, you know, just they were so tired from the day. They would there were showers and but I don't remember us taking a shower there, because my mom would always just bring the hot bath and pour the water in and then dump it, because we, you know, showers were not common then. It was, we did our baths in tubs.
You mentioned playing out in the field. What did you do when you weren't working? What did, as little kids, what did you all used to do?
I remember, as I got older, I remember that when they took us out to the tomatoes, if you got bored, you started throwing the tomatoes at each other, and most of the time you got in trouble. And, you know, it was, I do remember a tomato fight. That I remember my uncle had taken us out. This was shortly afterwards. My uncle had taken us and said he needed us to go help with the tomatoes. My mother wasn't there. My mother didn't go out that day. And so an uncle, he was trying to pick up as much child labor as he could. So we went out, and since we weren't under my mother's supervision, usually we were very, you know, we did not disobey my mother. My mother said, "You do this, you did it." We never wanted to get my mother upset with us, because that you just didn't go there. But I remember my uncle took us out, so we thought it was going to be play day. We were picking tomatoes, and this one particular day, my brother was just—I had a brother who just hated it. He hated it, and he hated it. He hated talking to my brother Eugene. He hated everything about it. He would.
How old is he?
He was my. There were eight of us all together. So he was my older, he was a year older than I, or about a year and a half. My mother had us like she had us in twos, you know. So he was about a year and a half older than me. And so at that time he was like about 11 or so. And I remember him just saying, I hate this, I hate this. And he started throwing, him and my other brother, I had a step, they started throwing tomatoes at each other. And all I could think of was, we are in trouble. And I, you know, I'm the one that was panicking because I could see trouble big time. And, but then somebody hit me with a tomato and that's it. Guy got into it. Just the typical child play. And all I know is that we, my uncle came and we got the scolding of our life and he took us all home. And once he told on us, we were in trouble. That's probably the only playtime I remember because the other, when working in the onions, you know, the smell of onions all day long, it was pretty depressing. My brother would just sit and stab the onions and we would just have to, like, you know, we'd have to do his share of the work for him because he would get, if he lagged too far behind, he would get discouraged. So between my other brother and I, we'd keep him between us and we'd, you know, we'd keep him going because we if you didn't stay together working in the, you know, as you were going up the long fields, it was pretty discouraging. You never let anybody lag behind because you kept each other.
Why was it discouraging?
Because you get left behind and you have no one to talk to. And all of a sudden, because you have the long rows, so you have to stay together as a group because you keep each other you're talking to each other. You get too far back, you know, there's no one, you know, everybody had a certain amount to do. And if you didn't do your share, you got left behind. And that meant if you had somebody out to go back and help you, you know, you weren't, you know, they ragged on you for the day. You know, you were not the most popular person if you didn't do your share. Everybody had to do their share. But I had one brother who just did not. I mean, we rescued him. Although I was younger than him, I probably did twice as much work as he did because we didn't want to get in trouble. Plus, we all wanted to end together. We knew that the only way out was to finish. There was no way. You did not stop in the middle of a contract. When you got a contract to do work a certain field, you had to do it completely. And one of the things is if you could get a contract, and the more rows you could get, that meant the more money. So if you went in, I do remember this. I remember my mom talking, well, you know, if they could guarantee so many number of people to work so many rows and you only had 3 days to do it, you know, that meant, you know, they had to calculate. Everything was mathematical in terms of, okay, we have, you know, if we have 8 people to do this, then, you know, if we can get it done in 3 days, that meant, you know, we could be guaranteed another, you know, another maybe 20 rows or whatever. You got contracted by the rows or you got contracted by, never, I don't ever remember us doing the entire field. You either shared it with another family. So that was, the whole idea is if you could keep that to yourself, that you could, you know, you made the money. But if you couldn't keep up with it, then you had to share it with another group.
Now, because you were, because of the family mainly being composed of children, were you paid the wages as well, or were they given, not paid to you directly, but to your mother?
Oh, they paid whatever we did. The wages were paid to my mother.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean it was the they got.
And all of you worked in the field. All the
everybody,
kids.
Everybody worked it. Whatever you could do, you worked.
Now, what about the education for? What about education? I mean, there's older children.
Well, my two older sisters, at that time, we lived across the street. You want me to stop for a minute?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
As far as an education, my two older sisters, we went to school. There was an elementary school right across the street from us. And my two older sisters, at that time, when we spoke Spanish only, it was against the law in Colorado to speak English, to speak Spanish in the classroom. So my two older sisters had a very difficult time because they did not understand English. One of my sisters would just continuously, every time the bell rang, she would run home. Because at that, you know, there were times of the year where you weren't working in the fields. Once everything was harvested, then your parents were, we were home. But anyway, we did all of us did go to school. My mother only got a third grade education. But as far as us as kids, all of us did go to, my oldest sister, she managed, she only got up to eighth grade. My second sister managed to get, she finished all the way to 12th. The rest of us, my mother really supported and encouraged education because she says, the only way you're going to get out of the fields is to get an education. So she did everything she could to support that. And when we were living in Colorado, I don't remember when I learned English. All I know is I remembered not to speak because I remember you would get punished because it was against the law if you spoke Spanish. So I remember being silent probably for my entire educational experience. I was a very quiet child. I don't remember when I transitioned from English, from Spanish to English. It just happened. I don't remember. But I do remember I learned to read immediately. I didn't go have to go to kindergarten. Kindergarten was if you didn't have any, if you know, if you had issues, because kindergarten wasn't necessary. But and I went right to first grade, and I remember reading, and I was always a good student. I eventually, when my mom brought us out here in 1963, after she divorced our dad, she remarried for the third time. Was having some major, again, domestic violent issues, and she did not want to go through that for the third time. So she to get away from it all, she moved us out here to California because she knew we had these uncles out here. But she continued to support. Do you want to go get, just to kind of wrap that one story up. So I did go, I'm now a teacher. I teach 7th and 8th grade. I'm a junior high school teacher.
Okay, let's talk about a little bit about, just one last question about the impact on your family with your father traveling and everything. What was the impact on you?
Well, we were raised without a father. I mean, we had no, I mean, the impact, you mean him being in the camps? You know, at that time, it was, he was gone. And all we knew is that whenever he was around, they fought a lot. Because, and so I remember it was peaceful. And I do know that he sent us money because of all the letters that, you know, he's the correspondence, you know, he made every effort to be responsible and to try to send us money, whatever he can. But that was not consistent. It was whenever he could. But the impact was that we lived in one little room with my grandparents. There were four, five, six, seven of us living in one room. And so the impact was that we did not have our own home. We were back in my grandparents, under my grandparents, you know, in their home, and we had to, and I remember it being very small, and the impact, but at that time, you know, we're little, so the amount of space was not really an issue, I know my mom struggled. The only way we were able to survive is because she did go, she went out and she did get public assistance. And that was one thing I did bring with me, and I won't share with them now, but these were all of the public, this is how we got along. These were all of the notes from, you know, the public assistance and how much money the government gave us at that time. And so she had to take and make it stretch because I thought they would give us, according to the documents here, you know, they would give us, $100 for eight. At that time, I kept a kind, you know, how money, everything was relative. Say, for example, here, she got this was in the year 1962, $171 for a month for for seven children plus herself. You know, this was kind of, these were the documents this is how we ended up surviving, was through welfare. So, but this, it also allowed her to have her freedom. She didn't have to to be a victim. One of the things is that my mother, when she married her third husband, my stepfather, is that my grandfather left her his, you know, his guns, because he said you need to, you know, when she died, she acquired them. She ended up having to, in being alone and protecting her children, he got drunk one night and he was trying to come into the house. They weren't married, and she ended up shooting him. She ended up shooting my stepfather in self-defense. And fortunately, he did not die. But what it did was it left her very, she was considered the mad woman in the block, because she attempted to defend herself. And because my stepfather's family lived next door to us, you know, it was, she had a very, very difficult time. And so that's why we ended up coming to California, just to get away from it all. In 1963, she just said, that's it. She brought us to California, and that's where our lives changed. We no longer had to work in the fields. We did continue with public assistance here. And then through coming here, I remember going one day as I was in junior high or high school, I heard about Cesar Chavez and the farm workers, the labor movement. And that's how I became politicized. I said, I could relate to that. And I became very much involved in the farm workers, the labor strikes. And at that time, and then went to college, became a teacher. And I continued to make it my major cause. So I was very excited when I saw this in the newspaper, because it's like full circle now. But I mean, there's a million and one other little stories along the way, but in a nutshell, my mother, I think, was a tremendously courageous woman. My father, not being there because not being around because he was here in the labor camps, didn't, you know, he kind of was absent from our lives for most of our lives. So I would like to, in this project, hopefully, maybe if I can find out where he ended up spending his time, be able to find more about him, because we lost contact other than the letters that we have. So I'd like to find out what his life was like.